What up, y'all? Welcome back to the award-winning 101.7 The Truth. This is The Grapevine with Ray Nitti, live from the American Family Insurance Studios. We having a real good conversation right now, y'all. We having a real good conversation about debt in our community. Not death, but debt. Let's get back to this. Let's get back to what's keeping us there. So we're talking about where it differently lies, right? We said 56% of black adults report owing money for a medical or dental bill compared to 37% of whites. I mean, say whites like that strong, but it's just capital W. Blacks and Hispanics households carry a higher share of unsecured debt, the kind that doesn't build any asset or wealth, versus secured debt like mortgages, which does. 58% of black Americans say they have more debt than savings, compared to just 30% of white Americans. Black debt-stressed cardholders saw their average balance grow 31%. So basically $2,300. It grew $2,300 between 2018 and 2025. A faster increase than most other groups, even though their starting balances were often lower. Think about that. Our balances started lower, probably because we'd be approved for less. But because of interest, it grows to even more. Debt isn't usually a character problem, y'all. It's overwhelmingly a response to real financial shocks from things like medical bills, inflation, income that don't stretch, that it just ain't enough, hitting people who often don't have savings to observe them. And then that shame spiral that people go in because of debt is often the thing keeping people stuck longer than the debt itself. Because we be like, man, to hell with them bills. To hell with them bills. I'm not dealing with it. I'm not dealing with it. To hell with you, Sally Mae. You scammed me. I just think it's wrong to give a kid $40,000 out of high school in college loans, student loans, after society has prioritized, like made it a priority that education after high school was so important. You needed all of this education, all these degrees, all of this, all of that. Only now, follow me. Only now for this generation to have an even harder time finding a place to work after they get out of college. People are graduating with all this debt and no place to go work. I remember when I dropped out of college, flunked out, however you want to say it, sharing my truth. I decided music was more important. So I was at the studio. And I ain't like how the teachers was treating me when I asked questions. You can't be a place of education and when somebody asks a question because it doesn't align with the programming that you are trying to implement, that your response to me is, Mr. Boynes, if you're just going to keep being a distraction, you should just leave. So I left, never came back. Y'all distracted me from these raps, man. I'd have had Bow in 2004 if I wasn't wasting time trying to understand why they think that. That's another conversation. Stay focused. The shame spiral is often the thing keeping people stuck longer than the debt itself, y'all. Debt ain't nothing to be ashamed about. Some of the most successful people got debt. But when we ignore it, that's when it becomes a problem. When we ignore it, it becomes a problem. And then we wanted to do a segment about how to actually get out of debt, but I'm not a financial advisor. And I can't give you advice on something I'm still actively figuring out myself. I can't tell you how to get out of something I'm still in. I can't do it. I wouldn't be the person that you should listen to. But what I can tell you is about a bunch of choices I made and decisions I made that was probably irresponsible as a young artist touring, enjoying life, having spirits. That probably helped keep me stuck in that debt. And continuing the shame spiral. To hell with you, Sally Mae. You're not getting it. I'm going on the road. And when I come back, I'm going to the club. It was times we got off of the road from coming back from Mississippi for a show and went straight to Onyx. We just made it to Onyx, 1:30 a.m. Y'all know the last call was at 1:25. But what I do? Me two bottles anyway. It's time. I'm here. And then I don't even drink it. It'd be for everybody else. We put so much money into things that we don't need, that we don't value, that, like, why do we do it? Miss Charlotte said something about us wearing designer. Hey, man, if you could afford whatever you want, go ahead, afford it. A lot of these designer folks, they don't even want us in their garments. Let's keep that in mind, too. I remember Tommy Hilfiger himself said, I don't make clothes for the black bodies. He said it. I ain't just making that up. But no, we run. We run the Gucci. We run the Louis. We run the Fendi. Prioritize these labels. I feel a way when you have, when you try to bring things to our community, right? And you're like, all right, we're gonna bring vendors. And then the pushback was, well, I hope the vendors aren't charging for their products because, you know, we give things away here. It's like, you know, people really can't afford to be buying these things. And I always push back. I'm like, no, I'm calling BS on that. One, we programming our community to always want something for free. And we programming them to not put real value on black business. So if we're trying to do a black market, like, why would you tell the vendors, like, and we say in this community don't have the resources to buy it and they can't afford it. And the whole community got on Jordans, True Religions, designer, iPhones. So we got to stop that narrative. We put the money in things we don't need. We don't need it. I wish MPS would go to mandatory uniforms. I wish. young people ain't gonna like me for this. But imagine the money a family is saving if all they have to buy is a few shirts and some pants to get them through the school year and not prioritize, oh, you gotta have this Balenciaga shirt, this Louis Vuitton shirt, this Gucci shirt. Get you 5 shirts from JL Marcus and go sit down and learn something. We prioritize the wrong things as a community, y'all. I wish when I saw MPS had considered uniforms, I was like, bet, amazing. They should. But our society has made school a damn fashion show. Purses. Cardis, we yayed up in the 8th grade. You still got recess, my boy. But we push these labels on our kids as well. And now they got a want for it. They got a desire for it. I think so many families would save so much money in the city of Milwaukee if we prioritize uniforms for MPS. You might not like it. And maybe them uniform funds can help fund MPS instead of putting it on the damn referendum in my taxes. It's just a thought. It's just a thought. But don't go anywhere, y'all. When we come back on the other side of this break, we'll be talking with Dan from the North Side on the award-winning 101.7 The Truth.
For the money, yes sir, 2 for the show. A couple of years ago, on Headland and the Low. What's the starter? Something good.
What up, y'all? Welcome back through the hood, just trying to find to the award-winning 101.7 The Truth. It's your boy Ray Nitty holding it down on the grapevine. Hope y'all feeling real fine.
This album was so cold. If that's the album I think it was. This is a Equemini album. No, this wasn't Equemini.
I don't know.
Might be wrong.
Welcome back, y'all. We got Dan on the line from the North Side. Dan, how you doing? You live on the grapevine.
I'm doing well. How about yourself?
I can't complain at all, brother. I can't complain at all.
So I was just kind of comment on a couple things you said relative to debt, managing debt, and material wealth and understanding, you know, not getting caught up in materialism. I think first and foremost, as a person who's going to go into adulthood, we ought to have some sense of, you know, learning from people's past mistakes, your family members, your own mistakes, and passing it down to what are the right choices for people to make, because you might be a 10-year-old today. And, you know, it's not important for you at this point to know about. But at some point, you become a 20-year-old, and all of a sudden, now you got to figure out how to, A, navigate in an adult world, and B, whatever money you're going to have, how do you be smart with it so that you can, you know, not always have to be on the grind, but at some point have the money work for you. I think not having, like, financial literacy is kind of, like, mandatory and school is a problem, mm-hmm. because you learn most things you learn when you're in, you know, grade school, elementary school, high school. And if you never get taught that in school, you get taught math, but you don't know nothing about how to apply math in the real world. That's a problem. Secondly, people are eventually gonna start to develop a family. Well, what's the cost of having a family? What does that mean in terms of money? Because now that dollar has to stretch more than just you. And then how do you prioritize your children's needs over your needs? And that until that education starts to happen, we're going to always be in a rut, because people who don't have to necessarily worry about this so much, not that they have so much money, it's that they understand how things work. You can't go into life debt-free. You're going to owe somebody something at some point in time. But how do you get a good deal? How do you pay that deal off? Do you understand the longer you take to pay it, you didn't pay two and three times more for the product than if you would have just saved for it? And then saving money, whether you save money under a mattress or you put it into something that's going to get you some interest. Those are discussions that we don't have as a community as a whole. And it's really holding us back.
Mm-hmm. Nope, I agree with you 1,000%, Brother Dan. Thank you for calling in. We appreciate that wisdom. 833-212-1017 is the number to dial. 833-212-1017 is the number to dial. Man, I love what he said, man. It's a lot of things that's holding us back, man. Not having that. I remember this is what I did appreciate from John Burroughs, and we weren't doing this in the Virgin Islands. When I got to John Burroughs, they had like a stock trading course. Like, and we had to do it on actual paper. So I wish that we would have had more of that. And that transferred over into high school. I think eighth grade, ninth grade, those are the best times that we should be hammering these type of lessons home to our young people, man, because right now we are in an era of just wastefulness. Wastefulness and everybody trying to stunt. Everybody trying to shine. So much so you got folks buying the fake chains and they necks turning green just because they want to look like something. But take your time, man. Let's take our time as a community. Let's really look at what we investing in. Investments. Right now, I'm prioritizing not spending unnecessary money. It's hard when I just spent $38 on cookies this week. It's hard. But when you prioritize not spending wastefully and you invest it in good areas. I'm not a financial advisor, so I'm not gonna get up here and tell anybody where they should invest at. But do some research. Look into a financial advisor that you could ask about the stock market. Right now I'm prioritizing putting my extra finances into the market. Because I can't rely on Social Security to be around in 5 years. I can't rely on Medicaid to be around in 5 years. I can't pass my kids down my Jordan collection or my True Religion collection. We ain't even the same size. Like, we hand down way more closets than assets. What are we leaving behind? What are we leaving behind for our families? What are we putting in place right now? Are we spending our money on things that appreciate or depreciate in value? You don't need to buy that Mercedes Benz off the used car lot with 250,000 miles on it. And it's a 2001. And they're going to charge you 30 bands for it because it's a Benz. I can't remember who called, but they called earlier and said, you know, they used to walk to the grocery store. And then they complained about it to their parents. And it was like, you walk into a home that you own. You walk into a house that you own, something that could be passed down to you. Do you know how mint you got to keep a car to pass that down to a child? And if you passing that down, this damn show a collectible at this point. We got to do smart investments. I could tell y'all what I'm personally doing, but I'm not advising y'all to do it because I'm not a financial advisor. I paid for a course. Somebody who's a professional that's going to guide me and be like, all right, put this money here. Look at these stocks. Look at these companies. Look at this ETF. Look at this fund. And I wish I was doing this in 2009, 2006, when we was promoting nightclubs and I was touring at the same time. You got a nightclub bringing you $5,000 on a Friday night, then another $4,000 on a Saturday. And we was Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and we had a Wednesday night. And what was I buying? Going to Silver Star the next day for the next event. Buying bottles. Going to My Fishers after the club. But in 2026, if I'd have invested 15 grand that we probably made in a month at Rain Nightclub, if I put that into Apple stock, back then when Apple was before the stock splits and all of that, I'll do you one better. I'll tell you what it was. If you invested $27,000 into Apple in 2001, by 2010, they said you would have had about, what does it say, $4 million or something? I got to Google it. I got to Google it and make sure I'm telling y'all the right thing. Because it makes me cringe how much M's I left on the table. It makes me cringe. If I was investing that money, music would be such a secondary, like, you won't be waiting on. Look at this. Jazz is insane. People just come up on the window. You won't be waiting on things like loans. You won't have debt. But we hear the things and we don't. It's not the cool thing to do. The cool thing to do is be turnt in the club because you the rapper. You Ray Nitty. And you got to buy all the bottles. But I told y'all, it got real dark for me, man. Once I decided to stop spending money on bottles and being in the club. Because then now your real friends, you start realizing who those real friends are. Said folks be door dashing Cheesecake Factory but got blankets blocking out the sun in the living room. We'll be right back after these messages, y'all. Don't go anywhere. What up, y'all? Welcome back to the award-winning 101.7 The Truth, live from the American Family Insurance Studios. This is The Grapevine with your boy Ray Nitty. We're talking about that money, man. A $10,000 investment in Apple stock in 2001 would be worth between $8 million and $9.4 million today, depending on exact date you purchased the shares. I want y'all to say, think about this. As many iPhones our community consume. If you got an iPhone, you should at least have one Apple stock. You should have one share. You should at least have one share. Think of all these things. Meta, Facebook. Let's see. $10,000 in Apple in 2001 would be $9 million today. $9 million. I'm trying to think if somebody worked a regular job and had decent pay, would they have made $9 million by then? I got to do that math too. $9 million. That's just letting it sit there, not doing anything to it. You don't got to go talk to nobody about it. You just leave it there. Watch it grow. Let me see what 10,000 in Meta at the beginning from its IPO. Let me see, 10,000 in Meta when IPO'd. Let me see what that would be today. Let's see. 10,000 in Meta when it IPO'd would be what today? So, if you invested $10,000 in Facebook, now Meta, at its IPO price. So think about this. When Meta, Facebook IPO, this was 2012. This is 12 years, 11 years after Facebook. I feel like these numbers are a little wrong, but it's saying $10,000 in Facebook in 2012 would be worth roughly about $160,000 to $162,000 today. That's not bad. That's not bad. And you got dividends added. Dividends is what they give you extra, depending on how much. Like my Meta shares, I get, no, Microsoft shares. My Microsoft shares, I get 91 cents per share in dividends. And then I just reinvest it. Now, I ain't going to sit here and act like I just got a whole bunch of Microsoft shares now, y'all. I'm talking about 5 shares. But I got others that I invested in. I'll give you one better. Why it's important to invest in a company and hold it for the long term. I had roughly about, man, this is when Apple stock split. So I got Apple shares at around $99 a share when it split. Google split around that same time as well. So did NVIDIA. I bought it at 99, thinking like, it's too high. I'm going to wait for it to drop lower. 2 years passed. I sold all 25 shares of my Apple shares. It went up to like $106. But then I got out of the market. I used that money to buy a house that we flipped. And what I do? Partied. Celebrated after we sold a house, went kicking it instead of putting it right back into the market. Now I don't got that liquid money. I don't got that liquid cash to put back in the market. And I just go about my day and wasn't focusing on investing. Years later, I look up. Apple $300. 340 something today. No, Apple 317 today. No. What is Apple today? Yeah, Apple is at 311 right now. Each share would have profited $200 just by leaving it alone. But because I was, that's 5 G's that I just left on the table. I'm just saying, y'all, we got to start prioritizing what we're doing with our finances, what we're leaving behind for our kids, right? So I ain't going to get into how to actually get out of debt because I'm still in it. I'm still in it. But the importance of investing. Only 53 to 58 of all Black Americans own stocks at all. That's actually higher than I was anticipating to hear, actually, compared to 61 to 70% of white Americans. And by dollar value, the gap is even starker. White Americans have 30% of their financial wealth in stocks, mutual funds, versus just 8% for Black Americans. Because we be pulling it out. We got a trip we got to go on. Black 401k participants who do invest put in 26% less per month than white participants on average. 231 versus 239. Even at the same income level. Lerante says, I would have invested in Berkshire Hathaway Class A or B. I wish I'd have known what that was back then. I wish. I keep saying Lerante. I just said this yesterday. It's Leron Taylor. He also says most people aren't privy to IPO information or announcements. A medical stock shot up. Yeah, Moderna. We've been seeing the Moderna commercial. Some of the option calls went up hundreds of thousands of percentages. A medical stock shot up yesterday because a skin cancer trial went well. A melanoma cure. I got a couple medical stocks. I'm hoping they get their trial. I'm hoping. That's what I'm hoping for. A Moderna moment. I called the wrong option. My gosh. I almost got to pull up this Moderna chart just to give y'all an example of why it's important to invest, but also important to get educated on what you're investing in. That's why it's important to invest it in quality companies, quality stocks. Moderna. I know y'all seen the Moderna account, the Moderna commercials. I'm gonna tell y'all, as a matter of fact, I'll tell y'all real quick before we go to break. I'm pulling up this chart, right? Just so we can see. So, now obviously the stock market goes up and down. It goes up and down. Yesterday, Moderna shot up over 100. Almost over $100, if I'm not mistaken, at one point. Almost $100. The 52-week low. I'll share that with y'all. That means throughout this year, 52 weeks, Moderna stock was at $22. So at some point this year, you could have got Moderna as low as $22.28. Yesterday, a new 52-week high hit where it reached $176. Don't go anywhere, y'all. We'll be back right after these messages. What up, y'all? What up, what up, what up, what up? Welcome back. Welcome back to the award-winning 101.7 The Truth, live from the American Family Insurance Studios. It's your boy, Ray Nitty, holding it down on the grapevine. DJ Brother Z holding me down with the production and sound. How y'all feeling, man? We talking about that money, man. We talking about that money, man. LaRon Taylor says 6 years ago he made over $150 being in a National Domino's commercial. He says, I spent maybe 30% of that paying off debt and blew the rest. What an idiot, he says. I say, man, you at least had the thought process to be like, let me pay off some debt. Somehow there's somebody in this world, LaRon, that may have gotten $150,000 with debt. They got that and did not pay off the debt, just went further into debt. I know it is. I know it is. But we was just talking about Moderna, how that shot up. Shot up over, it just shot up from $22 was the low at some point this year to now it has a high of $176. So each share, if you got in at a nice price, let's say you got in at that $22 mark, that $20 mark, each share you had, you profit $150. But here's the thing about stocks. That's why you got to be careful. And I am not a financial advisor, so do not make any financial decisions based off of anything I'm saying up here today. Stocks go up and they go down. So as fast as Moderna shot up to 176 yesterday, somebody who hasn't got the right mental fortitude or the right training to be like, let me wait, see what's happening. They might be like, they might have that FOMO, fear of missing out. So they're going to jump in. They might jump in at 150. 160, you know, it's like, oh man, it got up to 176. I got to get some of that. So now they done bought 100 shares at 150, 160, thinking they about to run back up. But today, Moderna is back down. It's still up from where it was at yesterday. But if you bought in at the high spot, it's down to 133 today. So you would have lost money. And that's why I just prioritize purchasing high quality companies. Microsoft, Google, Apple, and a few ETFs. But learning when to get in these companies is what's important. Because you don't want to buy at the high point. You're gonna lose money every time. All right. So let's keep this going, y'all. We're talking about the real gap. We talked about the 401ks. We talk about how many of us actually invest in stocks. It says only 53 to 58% of Black Americans own stocks at all, compared to 61 to 70% of whites. I thought that number was pretty high for us. So we're making some progress, y'all. So here's the upside. Participation among Black investors under 40 has been closing the gap fast. 68% of young Black adults now invest, compared to 57% of young white adults in the same recent survey. So we getting there. We getting there. We still got a generation of us that don't trust things like banks and the stock markets. We still got a few of our boomers that's burying their cash or hiding their money under a mattress or shoebox. And black first-time investors are three times more likely than white first-time investors to have started during a recent market entry point. Barr says because they invest, dumped the system, wait for people to hop on the bandwagon, and those big investors going to drop out the stock and take your money. Yep. 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 They prop up the market and they crash it. They put a whole bunch of money into certain companies, certain stocks, or they pull it out. And we get left holding the bag. That's why it's important to understand what you're investing in. So why this all connects, y'all? I only got a couple more minutes here with y'all before we got Jazzy stepping into the booth. A Credit Suisse study found that even among the wealthiest 5% of black households, they're still more likely to hold safe assets, real estate, bonds, life insurance, than stocks. Meaning even black families who've built wealth are building it more slowly than white families with similar income because of what they're invested in. I told y'all, we just don't trust certain things. Life insurance protects your family if you're gone tomorrow. Investing grows what your family has 20 years from now. Most people only have one of the two. Which one you missing? 833-212-1017. 833-212-1017. Which one are you missing? Do you have both? Life insurance and investing in stocks? I just want to know. We're going to bring this home. Bringing it home, wrapping it up, I promise you. And this is Fact Check confirmed via Wisconsin Policy Forum, UW-Madison's Institute for Research on Poverty and the Wealth in Milwaukee 2025 report. Milwaukee's black home ownership rate sits at roughly 27.5%. That's less than half the white home ownership rate at 72%. Wisconsin as a whole has one of the widest black-white home ownership gaps of any state in the country. And that's why I ask of politicians, what are you going to do for black Wisconsinites? I'm going to keep it going. I only got a couple more minutes. Nationally, the average white household has a net worth of $171,000, about 10 times higher than the average black household, $17,150. Mark Levine, a UWM economist, has found black Milwaukeeans are actually worse off financially today relative to white residents that they were 40 to 50 years ago. So we worse off today. A black household in Milwaukee earning over $100,000 a year is twice as likely to live in a concentrated poverty neighborhood as a white household earning under $10,000 a year, meaning income alone doesn't buy the same neighborhood access. Black-owned employer businesses in Wisconsin generate an average of just 42 cents for every dollar generated by white-owned businesses. A direct reflection of unequal access to commercial lending and capital. We talked about this. Somebody said it in the chat. This ain't just history. It's still actively happening. Black households continue to face higher mortgage loans, denial rates, and higher interest rates than white households with comparable income and credit. And this is according to the UW-Madison housing researchers. So the $40 trillion national number, y'all, the credit card debt number, the life insurance investing gap, none of it exists in a vacuum. Redlining, lending discrimination, lower home ownership access in Milwaukee specifically compound every single one of the national trends this show covered today. I felt like we was teaching today. I felt like we taught something today. So local groups like ACT Housing, Take Root Milwaukee specifically help Black and Latino families navigate the home buying and credit building process. So just in case anybody is looking for somebody to talk to, holler at them. All right? And I'm going to share this Black Pioneer again. We shared this of the day. Today's Black financial pioneer is Maggie Lena Walker, 1864 to 1934. In 1903, Maggie Lena founded St. Luke Penny Savings Bank in Richmond, Virginia, becoming the first Black woman to charter and serve as president of a bank in the United States. Born to a formerly enslaved mother, Walker built the bank specifically so Black families could access mortgages and financial services white-owned banks refused them. By 1924, it had helped more than 700 Black families buy their own homes. All right? I would read some more, man, but I gotta make some way for Shannon. Let us have a bank that will take Jazzy. Let us have a bank that will take the nickels and turn them into dollars. Quote by Maggie Lena Walker. Don't go anywhere, y'all. To Tap In is next with Miss Jazzy, Jazz Tyler.